Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
I don't even know what my toes look like. Guys don't really care about that stuff. They said they were having a good time. We will stand out on the lawn on Saturday and wait for the spacecraft to take us to the other planet. You're welcome.
And now, today's episode.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thanks for showing up.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Could have at least put some pants on. Seriously? That's just rude. I'm sorry, that's just rude. Hey. Welcome to the program. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm the guy to whom they refer to in the title. I'm not here today. I'm sitting in for myself. Oh, God, that's confusing. So what's going on? What's happening? You talk for half an hour. Let's see how much you like it. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what you want to hear. What do you want to hear? You want me to compliment you? You want me to tell you how wonderful you are? You're wonderful. You happy now? I spread love and understanding. That's what I do. I'm spreading love and understand. Look, I'm spreading it. Thank you. Thanks for showing up. Really, seriously, I mean that. Well, interesting show today as far as I'm concerned. We have an interesting guest coming up a little bit later on in the program, and that shall delight you to no end, believe me. But before that, listen to me talk for a little while. Here's a good thing about that. You don't have to do anything. Just sit there and be quiet. Oh, what a luxury for you, huh? If you want to get a little sleep, take a nap, go for it. I mean, I'll just keep talking. It doesn't really matter. I'll fill the air with, you know, stuff, and you just don't worry about it. Anyway, you know, I was thinking recently. That's the end of the sentence. That's the end of the program. Good night, everybody. You know, I was thinking recently. When I was growing up, oh, God, Ron, not another when I was growing up bit. Well, yeah. When I was growing up, we didn't have psychological diseases. They didn't exist. There was psychotic. I guess that was a thing. But beyond that, I'll tell you, no. My neighbor, there was a kid my age, neighbor. And apparently his parents were giving him Ritalin. And I didn't know what Ritalin was. I thought it was like, well, they're just doing, like, tell him a bunch of riddles. Why the chicken cross the road, Bob? Well, I don't know. To get to the other side. We want another riddle? This is Ritalin. Apparently the kid just couldn't sit still. He just couldn't sit still. He always had to be doing something. He was like hyperactive. So they put him on Ritalin, and he was still hyperactive, but a little less so. He was still hyperactive. I mean, we name everything that we do as a disease, either physical or psychological. It's like Dr. Phil. I mean, he's coming up with you have this and you have this. You've been diagnosed with this and I think it's this and you have this. Oh, stop it. Oh, just stop it. Here's the bottom line. People have different personalities. Some of them have extreme ones. Some of them have none whatsoever. Some are in the middle and don't know which way to go with it. But we all have something going on. As I got older, I started realizing two things. And two things only. First, everybody I know has some type of a physical problem. Everybody I know, has some type of physical problem that really inhibits them to some extent, and they're concerned about it. They're being treated for something. And it could be a stiff neck. It could be a knee that hurts. It could be a foot pain. It could be eczema. It could be some type of an oozing sore pus thing that doesn't go away. It could be like excessive earwax. It could be allergies that just don't ever stop. It could be a cold sore that never seems to go away. It could be a pain in your side. Is it appendicitis? Did I pull a muscle? Speaking of pulling muscles, a lot of muscles to pull. There's a lot of muscles to pull. And as I've said on the show a couple of weeks ago, if you sleep wrong, you don't know what's going to happen when you wake up in the morning. It's like spin the roulette wheel of aches and pains. Let's see which ones I have today. You get up to a certain age, you start having arthritis and all kinds of joints. And you start realizing, well, I had more joints than I thought I did. Headaches, migraines, you name it. I mean, somewhere on your body right now, you have a pain or an ache or something that bothers you every once in a while or something you have to see the doctor about. We all have it. And the older you get, the more of them you have. Don't be shocked. Don't go crazy. It's what happens. And here's the difference. When we're young adults, nothing's wrong with us whatsoever. You fall down, you get up. Big deal. It's all over. Nothing hurts. Everything's fine. Wonderful. I can drink as much as I want. I can smoke as much as I want. I'll never die, etc. Then you hit 30 or 40 and you start realizing the party's a little bit over now. I don't have the stamina I did. I can't get it up anymore, whatever the case may be. My vagina hurts. Don't put that thing in there anymore. You never know. Everybody's got a disorder. Everybody I know has some type of a mental problem, in my estimation. Either you don't think much of yourself, you have no confidence, you have no self-confidence, no self-worth, or you're egotistically ridiculous. You think you're better than everybody. You think you have all the answers. You think you're the king of the world. Everybody's in one of those categories. If you're in the middle, choose a side. This person doesn't listen to the other person. They just keep talking. They don't shut up. This person's being too dramatic. This one is too quiet. This one is too shy. This one is affected by everything. This one thinks everything is a why me, why me, why me. And then there's others. Nothing's going to touch me. I'm Teflon. Nothing's going to happen to me. Screw everybody else. It's survival of the fittest. And then other people are like, church people. We're like, oh, I care for everybody. Screw me. I care for everybody else, though. We've all got some kind of personality quirk. You drink too much. You don't drink at all. Personally, the ones that say I don't drink at all probably are saying that because at one point in their lives, they drank too much. If not, what the hell's wrong with you? Have a good time. Just everything. Everybody's got stuff. And somehow in our world and in our lives, we make this fictitious normal person. This fictitious normal person that everybody wants to be and everybody strives to be doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. That's fantasy land. Your role model doesn't exist. You'll never be 100%. So that's the point. And here's what I discovered when I got older. It's that stop it. Stop trying to be something else. Realize who you are. Realize what inhibits you. Realize what things are comfortable for you and which things are not. which things you want to do and which things you just really don't want to do. Even though everybody says, no, you should be doing this. Don't take the heat. Your response is, I don't care to do this. We're done talking about it. Know who you are and stop trying to correct yourself so much. Sure, you're an insufferable pain in the ass, but that's who you are. I don't know what the disease name is for insufferable pain in the ass, but whatever the name is, apparently you have that disease. We've all got something. All God's children got something to complain about. And that's the deal, man. Everybody's got a disorder. Some of them are actually dangerous. Yes, yeah, psychotic people, you can steer clear of them as much as possible if you can. I mean, half of us are depressed, especially with that social experiment that's been going on for a year and a half now. You know what I'm talking about. That was the year and a half social experiment that existed after the 4-year social experiment. Yeah, the past 5 years have been under the category of things that fuck us up. Yeah, it's been like the test labs of sanity. In any event, yeah, it's been rough, and people are depressed. And depressed people, some of them like to be around other depressed people because then they feel like they're in the company of the same kind of person. Other people like to be around joyous people who aren't depressed because it helps them out of their depression. And then you wonder, well, how come I can't be like that? It's because you're not like that. You can sit on a couch in a psychiatrist's office and a psychologist's office. One dispenses medicine, the other just sits there and collects your money. You can sit there for years and years and come out thinking that you've been cured. You have been cured. You put a little mute on your problem. You still got the problem. Who are you trying to kid? Come on, man. It's okay. Some of us have habits. We're really prone to habitual problems. You know, you want to smoke some weed? Sure. Now you're hooked on weed the rest of your life. You can't stop smoking. Speaking of smoking, God, you know, the nicotine gets into your system. It's a drug, man. You can't put the cigarettes down. Drugs, you can't put the drugs down. Alcohol, can't stop drinking. Makes me feel. That's how I self-medicate. Makes me feel good. But then the next morning makes me feel horrible. What the hell is wrong with me? Everybody's got a problem. And if you have an addictive personality, it's a little worse. Some people are very aggressive. They get what they want in life, but they're assholes on the way. Can't have everything. Oh, Ron, that's not true. There are some business owners that are very successful and they're very nice people. No. My opinion. I don't know aliens from another planet. If there was a spaceship that landed here on Earth from another galaxy, I don't know how those people are. They could be wonderful people, very caring, very advanced, very loving, very, very in tune. They don't have to talk to each other. They just look at each other and they can tell what the other is thinking. By the way, I would not want that. I would not want that. I don't want to look at somebody and telepathically know what they're thinking. That would ruin everything. That would ruin relationship. If you can't hide stuff, we got some problems. No, you can't be that genuine and expect anybody to like you. Ron, I love genuine people. Oh, really? Okay, sure. Yeah, right. You love genuine people. I don't think so. You have no idea. Yeah, man. Yeah. We every once in a while talk to a guest from the United Kingdom or Germany, I think is where they're located, Share International. They're great people. I'm fascinated by them because they basically talk religion without talking about religion. They talk about the spirit of people. I think that's pretty cool. And they say that there are very learned people who have been around for hundreds of years, you know, have a long lifespan. And they come down from the mountain, literally, and they save humanity. And I subscribe to that. I think I don't see any problem with hoping and believing that's the case. If there's one thing I'd love to see sometime, but I won't, is everybody getting along in the sense that, yeah, I disagree with you. I vehemently disagree with you. But you're entitled to your opinion, and as long as our views don't hurt anybody, that's okay. It used to be like that here and there. I don't know, man. I don't know. I think the more you get, you have to go for the survival aspect of things, the more nasty you have to be. You know, it's called survival. We actually play survival games. We have television shows. I think one is actually called Survival. You put people in situations where they have to destroy the other person in order to survive. Good times, man. Good times. Nice game show. Good times. Not. Oh, I don't know. Am I pontificating again? Did I do the pontiff thing? I'm so sorry. I don't mean to do that. You know, you can be a pontiff too. That's one job I always wanted, but I didn't. Not the pontiff thing. That's going a little too far. But, you know, I wanted to be like a priest or a rabbi or some type of religious thing, and stand in front of people and just tell them what they should be doing. And not knowing at all what I'm talking about. As I had told you, I'd been a videographer for a couple of decades, a very lucrative business, very nice. I'm glad I did it. But I would go to church like 4 or 5 times a weekend because I was a videographer, and I went to weddings like one after the other, boom, 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 3-4 days in a row. And I would videotape the wedding ceremonies in churches and synagogues, etc. And there would always be a man, sometimes a woman, standing up behind a pulpit telling the bride and groom how to have a successful marriage. And yet, in most cases, most priests, most denominations, the $5 bill and the $10 bill, they've never been married before. And I always found it so ironic, so laughable. I had to stop myself from laughing. Here's a priest who might have never had sex in their life with other adults. Careful, Ron. A priest standing behind a pulpit telling the bride and groom how to have a successful marriage and a successful relationship. You never had one, sir. Well, yes, I did, because I'm married to God. Oh, God. Seriously? Who does the cooking? I mean, I'm married to God. It's a really nice phrase. I get it. I get it. But you can't tell people how to have marriage relationships if you've never been married. I'm sorry. You just can't do that. You need to cut that out of your sermon. You really do. I always found it fascinating that priests are telling other people about relationships and marriages. I mean, seriously, would you read that in a book? What book do you read? Oh, that Bible. Oh, that's right. Forgot. I never read the Bible. I watched it on DVD. It was pretty cool. I watched The Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston. He played Moses. Fascinating. a nice bunch of fables, I tell you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, my guest is coming up momentarily. I hope I have not insulted anybody today in any way, shape, or form. That is not my purpose. That's not why I've been placed on the planet. I was placed on the planet in order to help mankind survive. If you have one of those diseases, as you've been diagnosed with some type of a mental disease because you can't focus on anything, or you're a little hyperactive, or it's you change your you that's your personality. That's what's called personality, and I guarantee you, not everybody on the planet is easy to tolerate. not everybody is that easy to tolerate. Do you understand? All right, my guest joins us after this commercial.
Did you know that 4 in every 10 American adults suffer from attention deficit disorder? I'm talking to you, so if you could, yeah, great. 4 in every 10 American adults suffer from attention deficit disorder, a condition, okay, still talking to you. Can you just for a minute, literally, 60 seconds tops? Okay. Attention deficit disorder is a condition that afflicts men and women. Put the phone down, maybe? Check your messages after I'm done, could you? Because you really should listen to this. Trust me. Attention deficit disorder afflicts men and women of any age and can be... Why do you have a rubber duck? Where did that even come from? Could you please put that away? Is it so hard to give me a minute of your time to... There is nothing on the bottom of your shoe. You have no reason to be looking at that right now. None. Yes, a bird flew by the window. They do that all the time. They're birds. Now let's talk about attention deficit. Jesus Christ, did you really just turn your chair around? You're spinning in your chair. Great, and my time is up. Adult attention deficit disorder. Get some help already.
Author P.C. Smith joins us now. She's a novelist, and she's... looking at some very interesting subject matter in a novel form. And Patty, how are you today?
I'm just fine. Thank you, Ron, and thanks for having me.
The Shingle Weaver's Picnic. Interesting.
Yes. This
is about an interestingly close-knit family, I understand.
Yes, it's a close-knit family, and it sort of brings people back to a time that's a little bit different than we have now. Mm-hmm. It was a big crisis for our world our particular nation to go out there under that kind of circumstances,
yes.
You know, bombing and the deaths that we had at Pearl Harbor. Everyone took it so personally. It was everybody's war. It was really sad.
Yeah, it's interesting to live through a time period where you're challenged continually and you feel like it's never going to end. Of course, it does. But does trauma and experience like that build character, or is it something that no one should go through?
Well, a lot of the bad things we go through in life teach us some of the biggest lessons mm-hmm. sometimes. And it was, I think, a jolt. It was a change. We had never been invaded, you know, in our own backyard. And it just sort of changed everybody's life, but everybody got into it in that. Mm-hmm. is what was most interesting to me. If you weren't young enough to go to war, you worked as a warden at night to make
right.
sure that the blinds were closed, the lights didn't show, or you right. wrapped the bandages at the Red Cross. Everybody contributed, yes.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to ask your age, but you are an author that has entered the author world at a later time.
You could say that. I just turned 85.
You could say that. Yes. Well, you sound like you're 40. So
I come from a long line of really healthy, long-lived women. So yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me just ask you before we get into the novel a little bit more. We're going through some very tumultuous times now. We have for the past 4 years at least, and then the icing on the cake with the prior year. It didn't feel like to me like the country pulled together in any way, shape, or form. Instead, it felt kind of like the opposite. And I don't think in times of hardship that this country felt anything here, whereas World War II, it brought a horrible thing, but brought us all together. Was there like a gigantic difference?
Yes, definitely. And that was one of the reasons that I think, you know, my children and my grandchildren were constantly asking me, what was life like, Grandma, for you when you were my age? Yeah. And when they found out that, you know, that you could survive without televisions or video games or computers, they were just aghast. Yeah. And then later on, my older ones asked the same questions, and I said, yes, it was a different time, a different attitude. I mean, the average annual income was only $950.
Yes.
And minimum wage was 30 cents. So, I mean, you can see this tremendous difference, but I said the biggest difference was what happened to the general population.
Yes.
And there was a bonding there I haven't seen, well, maybe for 10 or 15 minutes after 9/11, but I haven't seen anything like that since. And I wanted my kids to know how important that bonding and loving of your country and everything is. And that was, you know, one of the reasons I wrote the book. Not all, but one.
Yeah. Oh, good. Now, in the story itself with this family, not only is there the Great Depression and the war and all that kind of stuff, but there's also personal tragedies involved in that story, isn't there?
Yes, yeah. This is a story of a young girl who, and some of it's what I did when I was a youngster. I, you know, added on to it for this story, but she used to spend all her summers with her grandparents up in Everett, Washington, and that was a very small little town, lumber town at one time. Mm-hmm. And the how they got the Weaver's picnic name was that it was very popular to have shingles on your roofs. They didn't have all this composite stuff we have now. And so part of these mills were devoted entirely to gathering, packaging, wrapping, and shipping, and getting ready to send out these bundles of shingles. And these people were called shingle weavers. And the people at the mills, we had a couple in town, once a year they would give this free picnic to all their employees or anyone that was attached to them, and most of the town was. And it was a wonderful event. I mean, there was log rolling contest, Greek pigs contest for the kids, and free ice cream. It was really, you know, a lot of fun. And that's how the story came about. And it was at this picnic that this little girl was killed. Mm-hmm. And that was just beyond belief for the town. How could anybody among them have done something so horrible? It changed the way they worked around their life. They started locking doors, which they didn't do before, and they looked at strangers a little more skeptical, and it did. It had a whole changing effect on the whole town.
Yeah, what's interesting in the book is that it's surrounded by simplicity and what was previous normality, but it was just everything was simple, everything was there to see, all the feelings were very bare. Very different than, again, now. And it's interesting. I like the book because it compares lifestyles. And everybody who reads it is alive right now reading this with our technology and our social stuff.
That's true.
And just to compare the environment that went on at that time is fascinating in itself. And it is a good scene for a book.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I had my trepidations, you know, at my age to all of a sudden decide I'm going to be a novelist, but I had thought about it, you know, most of my life. I used to write little notes and put them on my mom's pillow at night if I happened to be in trouble. That certainly got me out from being grounded, so I thought, writing works.
Yeah, it does.
And so I had a chance later in life, and I think I got so many contacts from women that were just about on the empty nest edge of their life, and they thanked me for pointing out that if you do devote a lot of your time to your family or your job or whatever it is that consumes you when you're younger, it's never too late to follow a dream. And they really thanked me for pointing that out, and I hadn't even thought about that when I wrote the story.
I think it's wonderful. It's not only cathartic, but it's also entertaining and involving for the rest of us. So it's a win-win for everybody. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it reads very nice. It flows nice. You did a great job. Are you penning something else by any chance?
Yeah, I do a draft. I just write down a bunch of things that that feel like they would fit well in a story, and then a bit out of that comes maybe my hero or my person that isn't so nice, and I get all this drafted, and then I sort of develop my characters and put them in the back, and then when I'm ready to write, I just bring them all out for an interview and pick the ones that I want. So that's how it works for me. It's a little strange sounding, but it works.
Yeah. It's interesting that when you go back in time like that, I guess the characters, here's my question.
Okay.
Characters very frequently to an author mirror somebody that they know, but it's not them, but they are the inspiration for certain characters. And when it's in modern times, it seems a little too familiar, but when you're going back in time, to that period, you can actually mirror people that you've known. How much are your characters based on people you actually experienced back then?
Well, a lot of the town folk, so to speak. I remember very clearly going up there and spending so much time with my grandparents every summer. Of course, I was looking at them through, younger eyes. But I can remember, just for instance, the local sheriff. He took it very personally that everybody was in his town. That was his job to care for us all. Mm-hmm. And he would do things like, he'd walk through the school corridors and he would point out to Johnny somebody, look, I saw your grandmother's lawn the other day and it hasn't been mowed. I want to see that done by Monday morning. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the kid would do it. Mm-hmm. So there was such a personal contact. The local doctor felt the same way. The pharmacist, they all were sort of like our little board of directors, so to speak. They were very intimately involved, and they were very personally involved. And I can remember them, very clearly. And, of course, I could listen to my grandfather talk about them, and then I got more of a child's idea turned into an adult reality. But that's where, I got most of my characters from real characters.
Very, very interesting. You were a child during the Great Depression, right?
Just the tail end of it, yes, but it was still in effect. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. At that age, did you get the feel of what was going on there, or were you kind of shielded from parts of it?
Well, to me, it was like normal. I didn't know, anything different than what I was going through, but it was so in your face when the war came, because there was rationing, and I can remember my grandma had ration stamps for me to get a new pair of shoes, and my grandpa would talk about it's so hard to get tires, and gasoline was rationed, and all kinds of things that had gone to war, like in the department store where they used to have all your appliances and a nice counter, your toasters and irons and washing machines. Mm-hmm. You ask, why aren't they there anymore, Grandma? Mm-hmm. And then you look, and there's a big sign on that counter that says, gone to war.
Yeah.
So everything that had a need out of our country or for our troops, we didn't have. They even asked the car people that made cars even asked that they, the government asked the car people, don't make any more, personal cars, because we need them for trucks. So it was growing up in something that I felt was different, but I didn't have the experience to compare it at the time.
So when a person comes up to you now, a young adult or a youth, and says, these are tough times, and is your immediate reaction like, you have no idea what tough times are?
Sometimes if it's some younger person that I'm talking to that seems really, really interested, I give them a chance to wiggle out before I give them my lecture. But if they keep questioning me, then I will tell them the difference and how they need to keep that in mind when they're forming their future, because it was something I would hate to see disappear. And right now, it's very confusing out there.
It is very confusing, and it's
Yeah.
One who was, I myself, I put my hands up, and sometimes I say, "What the hell are you doing? What the hell's going on here?"
Yeah. My opinion, too.
Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah. It's a great book, and I recommend it. And I thank you so much for talking with us today. It's called The Shingle Weaver's Picnic. How can people, well, I guess it's available everywhere, and Amazon, wherever you'll find books.
I do have, I'm not going to believe this at my age, but I do have a website.
Well, of course.
I was one of those seniors who was going to dig in my heels, and I'm not going to have a computer, you know, until I couldn't live without one.
Yeah, but.
And then I wasn't going to have a laptop, and for sure I wasn't going to have an iPhone that had a bigger IQ than mine. But here I am now with a website, and if I can give that to you.
Please.
It's lowercase, and it's authorpcsmith.com. Anybody has any questions or wants to know where they can find the book, tell them to go to the website. They'll find it there.
Perfect. A pleasure speaking to you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great fun.
Well, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until that time actually arrives, I wish you peace.